It thought for a moment. It had crossed its mind that there might be an alarm sounding somewhere, but logically, an alarm ought to have repeated on the control deck, and it had heard nothing in the background when Yalcin spoke, apart from the changer's muttered interjection. Therefore, no alarm. It reached back into the conduit with a cutter field.
"Which eye?" Avadis said, from just too far away. A wisp of his thin, yellowish hair was blown across his forehead by the breeze. Zoxal waited for the man to realize, but he didn't. He just patted the hairs back and stared up quizzically at the Adiran's head, gun ready, face uncertain.
"This right one," Zoxal said, turning his head slowly.
Avager looked round toward the nose of the train again, then back at Zoxal.
"Don't tell you know who, all right?" "I swear. Now please, I can't stand it."
Avager stepped forward, still out of reach. "On your honour, you're not playing a trick," he said.
"As a warrior, on my mother parents' unsullied name, on my clan and folk, may the galaxy turn to dust if I lie."
"All right, all right," Avager said, raising his gun and holding it out high. "I just wanted to make sure." He poked the barrel towards Zoxal's eye. "Whereabouts does it itch?"
"Here," hissed Zoxal.
His freed arm lashed out, grabbed the barrel of the gun and pulled. Avager, still holding the gun, was dragged after it, slamming into the chest of the Adiran. Breath exploded out of him, then the gun sailed down and smashed into his skull. Zoxal had averted his head when he'd grabbed the weapon in case it fired, but he needn't have bothered. Avager hadn't left it switched on. In the stiffening breeze, Zoxal let the unconscious human slide to the floor. He held the laser rifle in his mouth and used his hand to set the controls for a quiet burn. He snapped the trigger guard from the gun's casing to make room for his larger fingers. The wires should melt easily. Like a squirm of snakes appearing from a hole in the ground, the bunched cables, cut about a metre long their length, slid out of the conduit. Unahar Klosp went into the narrow tube and reached behind the bared ends of the next length of cables.
"Yalcin," Hauser said, "I wouldn't take you with me anyway, even if I decided not to come back down alone."
He grinned at her. Yalcin frowned.
"Why not?" she said.
"Because I'd need you on the ship, making sure Balveda here and our section leader didn't misbehave." Yalcin's eyes narrowed.
"That had better be all," she growled.
Hauser's grin widened, and he looked away, as though he wanted to say more, but couldn't for some reason. Balveda sat, swinging her legs from the edge of the too big seat, and wondered what was going on between the changer and the dark, down-skinned woman. She thought she'd detected a change in their relationship, a change which seemed to come mostly from the way Hauser treated Yalcin. An extra element had been added. There was something else determining his reactions to her, but Balveda couldn't pin it down. It was all quite interesting, but it didn't help her. She had her own problems anyway. Balveda knew her own weaknesses, and one of them was troubling her now. She really was starting to feel like one of the team. She watched Hauser and Yalcin arguing about who should accompany the changer if he came back down into the command system after a return to the clear air turbulence, and she could not help but smile unseen at them. She liked the determined, no-nonsense woman, even if her regard was not returned, and she could not find it in her heart to think of Hauser as implacably as she ought. It was the culture's fault. It considered itself too civilized and sophisticated to hate its enemies. Instead, it tried to understand them and their motives, so that it could outthink them and so that, when it won, it would treat them in a way which ensured they would not become enemies again. The idea was fine as long as you didn't get too close, but once you had spent some time with your opponents, such empathy could turn against you. There was a sort of detached, non-human aggression required to go along with such mobilized compassion, and Balveda could feel it slipping away from her. Perhaps she felt too safe, she thought. Perhaps it was because now there was no significant threat. The battle for the command system was over. The quest was petering out. The tension of the past few days disappearing. Zoxal worked quickly. The laser's thin, attenuated beam buzzed and fussed at each wire, turning each strand red, yellow, and white. Then, as he strained against them, parted each one with a snap. The old man at the Adiran's feet stirred, moaned. The faint breeze had become a strong one. Dust was blowing under the train and starting to swirl around Zoxal's feet. He moved the laser to another set of wires. Only a few to go. He glanced toward the nose of the train. There was still no sign of the humans or the machine. He glanced back the other way, over his shoulder, toward the train's last carriage and the gap between it and the tunnel mouth, where the wind was whistling through. He could see no light, still hear no noise. The current of air made his eye feel cold. He turned back and pointed the laser rifle at another set of wires.